Welcome to the Trilux Podcast. I'm your host, Michaela Smith, joined by producer
Cooper Maz.
If you're new to the Trilux Podcast, it's a bi-weekly deep dive into all things marketing. We break down the latest news, explore trending topics, and delve into both innovative and tried and true marketing strategies with our subject matter experts, many of whom are our Trilux team members. In the first episode, we talked all about marketing on your own channels, and in episode two, we talked all about your paid channels. So today, we're talking all about our earned channels, and I'm very happy to introduce you to another co-host, Laura Sprague.
Hello.
Nice to have you on, Laura. We're so glad you're here. And as you know, if you've listened to the first two episodes, in season two, we'll have a few rotating co-hosts. So they'll join us each for a few episodes. And Laura, as a senior communications specialist at Trilux, has a wealth of knowledge about our earned channels. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Laura.
Well, first of all, thanks for having me so much on the podcast. And talking about earned media may not be everyone's passion, but I really do enjoy it. It is a real foothold in terms of what we do in public relations and the benefit that we can add to many clients' campaigns, whether they're thinking about it or not. And when I'm not thinking about earned media, which, it's all the time. I enjoy my other facets of work here at Trilux. I also have two little boys at home and two dogs, so we're always running somewhere or into something, it seems. Yeah. But I truly do enjoy the opportunity to talk with you and the other team members here at Trilux about how this channel can really make a campaign pop.
Absolutely. And, you know, we're very happy to have you share your expertise with us, but as one of our three really foundational pieces to your marketing plan, everybody today is going to be learning and caring a lot about your earned media. So as we talked about, we'll be exploring our earned channels, but if you haven't listened to the first two episodes of our marketing checkup series, I highly suggest going back to listen to that as our conversation will build off of that foundation. If you've already listened, let's get into our earned channels discussion, and we'll be joined today by our guests, Communications Director Abby Bottenfield and Brett Adams, Trilux President and Chief Marketing Officer, will be back. Okay, it is time for the latest marketing news.
Boo-boo, 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 boo.
Thank you for the sound effects, as always.
Of course.
What is March without a little madness? ESPN's Go With Your Gut spots urge viewers to tap into their chaotic inner dialogues to make bracket predictions for this year's NCAA tournaments. In one spot, an avid birdwatcher predicts Creighton flying through the early rounds. Pretty punny. While another depicts a man squeezing into his clothes with visions of UConn Huskies winning it all. That one's maybe a little bit mean. What do you think, Laura? Did you fill out a bracket?
So I am not a big bracket fan. But
you and I both.
This campaign speaks to me. As any longtime basketball fan knows, bracket success comes down to one thing, and that is sheer luck. So the campaign plays off the seemingly random yet equally plausible strategies to prove that fun isn't always just reserved for the diehard fans.
I totally agree. I mean, I'm not the target audience typically for, you know, March Madness or any other kind of, you know, sports advertisement, but this, I like the trend of them kind of appealing to the mass groups. And fun fact for you, you have a 1 in 9.2 quintillion chance of getting a perfect bracket.
Brackets are so hard. Like, I guessed the two biggest upsets of the tournament, and I'm 17th in the company bracket pool. So
wow.
It's really difficult.
Did you put in research to formulating your bracket, or did you pick it like I would? Like, I like this color, and
yeah.
I like this mascot.
Yeah.
Kind of a little bit of just, like, gut, a little bit of gut instinct, and a little bit of, like, basketball I've watched. Like, oh, I know this team's supposed to be pretty good. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, I got to sprinkle in, like, an upset here or there, you know. I'm just like, yeah, Princeton, sure. Let's have Princeton beat, you know, the number two seed. Sure. You know, it's stuff like that where I'm just like, you just kind of have to go with it. And then it never works out because no one's ever gotten the perfect bracket.
No. Or maybe they have. We should do a little bit more research.
No, no one's ever gotten a perfect
one
bracket.
One in 9.2 quintillion. I can't even wrap my head around that.
That's an insane number.
Yeah. All right, our next piece of news.
All right, so social giant TikTok introduced screen time limits for teens last week. Now, users under the age of 18 will have a daily 60-minute screen time limit. After an hour, users will need to enter a passcode to continue using the app. Users under the age of 13 will need to have a parent or guardian input a passcode to extend usage by 30 minutes.
I think this is a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I think my generation was one where, like, social media was still really new when we are extremely impressionable, like, preteen, teenager, young teenager ages, and there was no guidebook. I mean, nobody was telling you, like, hey, don't post a bunch of weird photos on social media because you are going to have a digital footprint.
Right.
And now we've really kind of run, you know, we've learned a lot of things the hard way. And I think just showing, you know, TikTok is so popular. I think everybody can count, you know, how many times that they've just sat there and scrolled and scrolled and scrolled, not meaning to. It's kind of addictive.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it is a good idea for the, you know, to have a little bit more of a push for digital well-being, a little bit better of a conscious mindset for this. However, it is still a lot of ways to, I've learned a lot of things from informative TikTok videos, and it's pretty easy to get around this kind of safeguarding.
Maybe it's wishful thinking, but I'm hoping we see more of this as time goes on with time restrictions and stuff, because it's clear people are struggling with policing themselves when it comes to technology.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, I've had to start being like, okay, I have to put my phone on the other side of the room if I have to go to sleep or something, you know?
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's clear, like, obviously if the phone's within reach, I'm going to grab it. Like,
we do a good job of it, I think, with younger children. You know, a lot of the devices they have screen timers built right into them, or, you know, as a parent or caretaker, you're thinking, okay, 30 minutes, or, you know, you do a chore and you get a set amount of minutes. But that usually does have a way of digressing as, you know, kids grow up.
Mm-hmm.
But when I read this, you know, I think about the age of 18, you're in college, you are well on your way to adulthood. I don't know how that
is
actually sits. And it says under the age of 18, maybe it's like 17, you know, but...
Or 16, if you can operate a vehicle, you should be able to operate your phone with maybe a few less restrictions.
Not together.
Yes.
Not while driving.
Good point. Yeah.
But, you know, like if you're in college and you're just 18 or something like that, that may feel a bit restrictive to have to enter a passcode.
Yeah, and, you know, I think it's kind of bells and whistles. It's so easy to get around this safeguard.
Mm-hmm.
But I think just, you know, having a little bit more of a digital well-being push overall is a good idea. It does make our jobs as marketers maybe a little bit tougher to break through in that, you know, if you do have that 1 hour. But, yeah, I mean, I can understand it being a little bit restrictive for people who are well into maybe knowing how to take care of themselves, their well-being in other ways already.
Mm-hmm. This has all kinds of repercussions for looking at, you know, usage times. Mm-hmm. And then if you're trying to post during that time, you know, that almost that pay-to-play content or really what you're going to have to do, like you say, to break through, to get past just a passive scroll.
Yeah. So. Is it going to be that 3 o'clock hour after kids are out of school or something?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We'll have to definitely keep on top of that. PepsiCo Starry, formerly known as Sierra Mist, recently debuted its first ad starring Keke Palmer and Philadelphia 76ers Tyrese Maxey. The ad premiered during NBA All-Star Weekend and depicts Palmer at a basketball game sitting next to Starry's new cartoon mascots, Lem and Lime. Isn't that so clever? As a player dubbed Soda Man appears and sweeps her off her feet.
Oh,
I think it's
gosh.
Hilarious. I love Sierra Mist.
Oh my gosh.
Well, I love Keke Palmer.
I will also say great. I love Keke Palmer.
You know, it's just interesting. Coca-Cola has forever had Sprite, right?
Mm-hmm.
And here we see PepsiCo, you know, with Sierra Mist, Slice, Storm, and now Starry.
Slice and Storm. I mean, I could not come up with that if my life depended on it.
Well, you know,
never heard of those.
Really reaching deep into that brand,
brand
exploration.
Starry, they're very, very climactic. I don't know,
but word would be. You know, really, what does it take for this reinvented wheel to make a splash with consumers? A splash?
Yeah, wow,
wow. is it always a star-studded commercial or cute little Lem and Lime? I have a lot of visions in my head for what this looked like.
I think you're onto something. I mean, we've seen you, for instance, in this year's Super Bowl ads, a ton of star power, ton mm-hmm. of celebrities touting products, especially, you know, celebrities that are very popular with Gen Z, who is, you know, probably a pretty big market of those who are buying soda or pop or soda, whatever you say. I say pop in the, here in the Midwest.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know. I think that's the thing, is that this will help it stand out a little bit more, maybe get a little bit more of a leg to stand on. But they do have that huge, you know, they have to compete with Sprite, which has that name recognition that is, you know, hard to compete with for sure.
I've always found Pepsi's marketing to be very interesting because they've always been number two. So they've always had to find different ways to market. I don't know if you're aware of this, but there's been a lot of talk about why are there so many like Pizza Hut, Taco Bell combos and stuff like that. Oh. It's because they all got bought by Pepsi in the 90s because mm-hmm. no one would take Pepsi. Like most places wouldn't take Pepsi because Pepsi's unofficial slogan for a long time is Pepsi okay? So that's why there's Baja Blast at Taco Bell, is because Taco Bell wanted like something more interesting, and they threatened, because eventually all those got siphoned off into a different company, and they're all owned by, I think it's called like Yum Brands or something.
Yep. Oh yeah.
But they still had a contract with Pepsi, but Taco Bell threatened to pull unless they got their own special Mountain Dew. Drink, so that's why Baja Blast. Yeah. So, but Pepsi's always been having to do stuff like that because they've never been able to have quite the same market share as Coca-Cola. So this is another interesting step to expanding their brand and trying to compete in a different way by rebranding something that's always going to be number two. But hey, let's just try to refresh it. And
nothing and says I care about my health like a Baja Blast.
Exactly. There's a whole rabbit hole of Pepsi marketing you could go down.
This is a good case study.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we'll leave that food for thought. Ba-dum-chink. And we will get into our discussion about earned media. Stay tuned. Today, we are continuing our marketing checkup series, and it's our last session all about earned media. We're joined today by Brett Adams, Trilux President and Chief Marketing Officer. Welcome back, Brett.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and Abby Bottenfield, Communications Director, is joining us as well. Thanks for joining us, Abby.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, and I know Abby was also on our first season about crisis communications. So to give you all a good working definition about earned media or earned marketing content, it's promotion or attention about your brand that you earn, obviously, by leveraging your relationships.
And you can often get this brand exposure by leveraging those relationships with members of the media, from other brands, through reviews, and more. So through this earned media discussion, and this is the last in our marketing checkup series, we want to be very clear that earned media is still an incredibly important part of your marketing efforts.
Absolutely. So in our first two episodes that we encourage you to go back and listen to if you have not, we made it pretty clear that your marketing efforts should be building upon each other and be consistent. So your owned efforts, if we, you know, we're really all about the analogies here. The owned efforts are the foundation of your house, and your paid efforts are maybe, you know, kind of the furniture you purchase inside. Your earned efforts are that one last step. You know, it's maybe all the ways that you make your house into a home. You're getting longer life out of it. You're maintaining what you own. All that is to say, if you ignore your earned marketing efforts, you're losing a lot of exposure for your brand, and you're doing your brand harm in the long run.
Yeah. You know, the earned media portion of your marketing mix is really that narrative that you control. So ultimately, if you're not telling that story, someone else is going to tell it the way that they'd like to tell it, or they're going to tell it for you. So it's a really key, important part. But I think sometimes, even more so than the other two, it's the one that gets overlooked by a lot of companies. So I think that a lot of brands look at that as nice to have, but I think we talked about in some of the other series, you know, with your paid media, you get to control that pretty easily. You just buy something, set it, forget it. With your owned, most people have a certain amount of owned assets, but when you're talking about earned, you have to be very proactive with that. And a lot of times companies just don't think that they have anything interesting to talk about.
Right.
That's a really good point. And with the shareability of news these days, and news outlets and industry publications being owned by, you know, one parent company, your content can be shared and run in many different markets, and those markets can differ greatly than what you're doing in your paid media efforts.
Yeah, exactly. So an effort locally or regionally on earned media could yield much greater publicity value in the end.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, really ties in well to one of our themes that we've been talking about in the entire Marketing Checkup series, all about resource allocation and investment. So we know that, you know, every organization has a set amount of resources that can only stretch so far. And most people understand that maintaining your own channels, producing your own content is pretty critical to, you know, getting the message you want to get out there. And we also talked about your paid marketing efforts probably being one of the largest portion of your marketing budget because you're obviously paying for those. But the good thing is that, you know, we talk a lot about measuring the data to, you know, clearly see your return on investment in all of your channels. I think a lot of people don't understand that you can still very much measure your earned media.
Yes, yes, you can. There are actually a handful of PR tools in the marketplace, such as Cision, which is what we use here at Trilix and Meltwater. They're designed to calculate ROI for your media relations efforts. So Cision, for example, can provide you with audience reach, so the estimated number of how many people saw an article or a broadcast, as well as the tone. So it can range from positive, neutral, negative, and then the publicity value, which is calculated by that tool. Publicity value is actually an actual monetary value placed on a media pickup that is factored in by considering readership of a publication or potential readership in an article and the average cost of an ad in that publication. So while it's an estimated number, the tools are able to provide you with that data that can prove the value of your earned media efforts.
Yeah. So you can really, you know, maybe target a pitch based on some of the publicity value that you might see. And it obviously helps, you know, measure the pickup that you have seen afterward.
Yeah. And it's really great because the tools allow you to just kind of set up your own list of reporters that you want to reach too. So you can select reporters with different beats in different markets. And so it's really a great tool to help you push out any earned media efforts and also monitor that when it comes in.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know, you know, one added benefit outside of the data is even that earned media is seen as a lot more trustworthy compared to, you know, maybe some of the content you're putting out yourself. Obviously, the brand wants to put out good content about itself. But, you know, a news source is seen as a little bit more objective, hopefully, and more trustworthy. In fact, 92% of consumers say that they trust earned media, while only half of consumers trust paid advertisements. And we'll link to that source in the notes.
Yeah, and you're actually getting the coverage from a different source and not yourself. So obviously, you know, the content you push out on your own is going to be, you know, positive.
Right.
And so when you're seeing it from a different source outside of, you know, your owned channels, then that trustworthy factor just kind of goes up for external audiences.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think there's a lot of validation with earned media that for a client or a company that understands how to use it to their advantage, it can really be a benefit. I think you also see the flip side with earned media where some companies that don't use it a lot look at earned media as, okay, if we're in the media, it's probably not something great.
Right.
Because maybe something that we wanted to put out a certain way or that we're saying a certain way is misconstrued or said differently. And I guess that's where we would really coach clients and companies to get ahead of that narrative and really tell the story. If there's a thought that there's kind of a different version of your truth floating around out there, then it's really important to kind of put together the resources and assets to get that story out there. And then when you can get that in the media, you know, it might be good, bad, or indifferent, but one way or another, you're at least controlling some of that narrative in determining if there are areas of improvement or areas that you can really focus in on. It validates for consumers. And like you talked about, it can also reach a much larger audience. When you have paid media, you're very concentrated on what you're going after. And with earned media, you're probably going to hit outlets that are a little outside of sometimes your demographic. But that reach is really good because, again, it's a validation point.
Yeah. And, you know, we've talked a lot about the need to put resources toward your earned media efforts. You know, and you mentioned having if, you know, something bad does happen with your brand, we, you know, have a whole crisis communications episode about this as well. But if you're putting your resources toward earned media proactively, you're going to have a better relationship with those media. So if something bad does happen, they're easier, you know, to share your side of the story, get your perspective as well, and build those relationships.
Yeah, building and maintaining media relationships is really key here, especially in a time where journalists are spread thin. There are a lot fewer journalists. They're much busier with the news cycle. So any way we can make their job easier for them, package the story so it's easier for them to publish, is going to go a long way. And just making sure that you're paying attention to what they're publishing out there, different stories, you're reading what they're putting out there and really understanding their beat and who they are. I think they really appreciate that when you can even just do that in extra outreach and tell them, hey, I read this article, great feature on this product or service. So just really getting to like know them and know that you could be trusted, for them to understand that you could be a trusted resource for them is really valuable.
So, Abby, you just mentioned something really interesting, and I'm going to go off script here a little bit and take us down a path. But you talked about building relationships, and I think that is really key, having a partner like an agency that can constantly be maintaining those relationships, knowing kind of what the pulse and the temperature of the media is. It's ever-changing. And so we'll usually have a primary pool of media for any given client that we will focus on. But you mentioned, you know, that there's fewer media today and they're busier. I guess on the flip side, there's also so many more secondary, what I'd call media, and it falls in a gray area between
curation,
some of the own stuff that we talked about and then some of the earned stuff. So talk to me about when we're working on media relations and we're working on kind of public relations, how you take into consideration all of those secondary kind of content creators that are out there that also really influence the news cycle.
Yeah, yeah. And whether they're bloggers or podcasters, obviously, they're another segment where we could really leverage earned media. We always maintain a good relationship with any of those outlets as well. And then we have our PR tools that also allow us to see those outlets too. So we're able to see like blogs and anybody out there who's producing their own content to help share the story. But yeah, those are also very important, a very good point that you need to be, use them as a resource too to help get your story out.
Yeah, and the crossover, I think, between a good owned, you know, product is that a lot of the media utilize social media as a validation point or a source. And to be able to go out and utilize one of those sources means that that audience really does influence the news cycle a little bit. And so on any given day, something can show up in kind of the social media universe and turn into news. And again, with the competitiveness of the media and content generation today, it doesn't take long for something to kind of fly in a, in a direction. And so having your finger on the pulse of that constantly and having your fingers in all those different buckets. So again, this is where there's that overlap between your earned, owned, and paid, is really making sure that those tools are working together and there's kind of a line of sight between all of them. So if something's happening in one area, the other area can react.
So we've talked a lot about the need to, you know, put resources toward your earned media efforts and build relationships with the media, but where do you start? You talked a lot about, you know, ways that you can craft a pitch maybe to make their lives a little bit easier, but what are some of the other more unique ways that we have done that?
Yeah, so I think it's just really important to know and understand their media you're reaching out to. I know I had mentioned that you look at the content they're producing, but also get involved in some of the events that those publications or broadcast stations are putting on locally and be present at, you know, events they host. Other things that we have done, we've met with local media and just set up a happy hour just to get to know them a little better. Really, you just want to be able to have them see your name come across an email or across the phone and be a trusted source and know that, you know, you respect them, they respect you, and that it'll just make it easier for, you know, that content to kind of funnel between the two.
And Abby, I've actually seen in action before. I mean, this might seem a little old school or antiquated, but a lot of times we'll even take customers on a little bit of a roadshow or do some kind of a media tour, again, with either trade publications or different content generators or stations, just to kind of put the customer out in front of the media to kind of help build that relationship and that source of trust.
Yeah, media tours are a great avenue to really reach maybe those markets that you don't have as much leverage in, or that you don't know or haven't worked with as much. So maybe getting your clients out to those different media markets to introduce them to the journalists and publications and outlets in that area really goes a long way with helping expand their reach in the media market.
Yeah, and with technology, you know, it does happen a lot now over the phone, over a Teams call or Zoom call or something where you can still somewhat be face-to-face, but still nothing really ever beats that face-to-face, having someone meet someone, have lunch, possibly, you know, have a drink, just something, where you can build that personal connection.
Yeah, and we actually work with a lot of trade shows, too. So that's another avenue where you know the media is going to be at some of those industry trade shows, and so we reach out to them beforehand, invite them to the booth for our client, make sure we're there, helpful, providing them information, a media kit, and so forth, just to make sure that they feel welcome. And, you know, it's another way that we can connect with them outside of just an email pitch, too.
Yeah, and that's a great way to kind of also, you know, have your source provide in an interview maybe at a trade show. If you know a lot of media are attending, the trade show is a big deal, or it's a big deal for the industry publications. I mean, have we done that at trade shows very often, is, you know, pitch?
Yes, we work with a lot of agriculture clients and manufacturing clients, and we typically do outreach before the trade show to let them know where the booth is, to let them know what topics our representatives on site will be available to discuss, and it's pretty successful. You know, they are there to get stories from these different exhibitors that are at this trade show, so making it easier for them to find you and know what they are going to talk about when they get to the booth is really valuable.
Yeah, I think, you know, on the account side, I always talk to our teams about, of course, we always want to be the first call from a client. You know, when they have something that they're thinking about, we want to be the first call. Well, on the media relations side, it's kind of the same objective. You know, we want to be seen as that resource that if they're doing a story on anything, we want them to reach out to us because there might be an angle that we can think of. We've got a large list of clients. Obviously, if we can kind of build those relationships where we get that first call, it's really beneficial.
Yeah. And I think it's really important to note that, you know, our earned efforts are not operating in a vacuum. We're not completely disregarding our owned and paid channels. And we've talked a lot about, especially in our own channels discussion, the need to have your content and the message that you're putting out there be consistent across all your platforms. So can you talk a little bit about the ways that we try to do that for our earned efforts?
Yeah, earned media should work in concert with what you're doing on the paid side as well. The messaging, the story you're trying to get out, they really do go hand in hand. And you likely already have the content to share the story. Packaging that and putting it out there to help leverage some additional earned media coverage really just helps you expand that reach and tell that story to a different audience than maybe you would on your own channels. So that could look like anything from, you know, sometimes we pull together a PR package where we have a media pitch, we have video, we have B-roll, we have different sources, we have social media, all kind of with the same message, getting that out and making sure that we're pushing the same message on both our earned and paid media efforts. So they do really go hand in hand.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you have, you know, maybe a blogger that you're working with as well, they might want to share your social posts. So it's really nice to offer kind of that social post supplementary content if they choose to use it as well.
Goes back to just making it easier for the people who are sharing the content. They prepare the message for them. And obviously they can make their tweaks to it as they see fit, but really helping package it for them so it's much easier for them to just publish and, you know, move on to the next story.
Yeah, and I think another benefit that you just touched on when it comes to generating content and then figuring out how to package that and pass it on, most companies are doing something, whether it's in the creative space or in the content generation space or in the communication space. And a lot of times companies that do all three facets can find that there's a lot of efficiencies between the three. And sometimes it seems like it's a heavy lift when you're doing one to get into the second one to get into the third one. But I think there's kind of a compounding effect of if you're doing something. So let's take, you guys do a lot of content generation here. I'm talking with three people that generate a lot of content. Yes. And we're talking about earned media. But when we're generating content, so whether it's blogs or web content or social content or any type of content, you're working with the video team on different ways to distribute content, it gives you that much more information. One, it's kind of a knowledge base, but two, on how that might turn into an earned media opportunity. Mm-hmm. And so often I think companies kind of come at it from the other direction where they're thinking, well, what do I have to talk about? What kind of press release, if you will, should I be putting out? And why would anyone care about that? But often there's something, you know, in just the day-to-day, the stories that you're telling, the content that you're creating, that is newsworthy or is media-worthy. And there's different ways to kind of figure that out. Again, I think I touched on it earlier. It's not always the big announcement or the big grand opening, or we've got a product recall, or we've got, you know, something like that that you want to put out in the media. It's very often that there's opportunities to enhance a story or enhance something that's already being told with the product or service that you provide and kind of where you fit into that process.
Yeah. I think we do a lot of that with our blog writing specifically. We repurpose that content in a lot of different avenues. We can pitch to the media and link to that blog on the topic. It could be thought leadership or, you know, like you said, about products, any sort of topic that seems timely and relevant that you think that the media could possibly run with. But in addition to that, we're also looking at our other channels. So we'll repurpose that in maybe an e-newsletter, email marketing campaign, and then also on social media, you're linking back to the blog, also driving more traffic back to your website. So there's a lot of different purposes for the content you produce, including earned media.
And I think that all just goes into controlling your message and the different ways that we can do that. And Brett, I really liked how you talked about something that is maybe every day for a company. We're seeing a lot of that with recruitment. So how does earned media play a part in the recruitment efforts that we're seeing a lot from our clients?
Yeah, recruitment's become a reoccurring theme on these conversations because, as we've talked about over the last few years, it's probably become the number one item that every company is tackling. Either they are constantly recruiting, maybe they have high turnover, maybe they are just growing and expanding, maybe their workforce is changing. We've seen a lot of workforce changing. And so having positive, you know, media relations out there about your company is, in my mind, probably the single most positive recruitment tool that you can have. Because think about, for any company you've ever thought about, you know, whether you've worked for them or we've promoted them or, you know, just that you do business with them, you already have that kind of preconceived notion of who they are and what they're about. And a lot of times you've seen that through some kind of paid media or earned media. And on the earned side, think about what experience you've had with that company. You know, it's either been very positive or potentially very negative. And so for those that are very negative, they have a big uphill battle to climb, because if they're looking for employees and somebody is going to apply and that's the first thought that they have is, boy, all I remember are these negative things that I've heard, you know, out in the media, that can be a big hill to climb. But on the flip side, if you know something positive about a company, I'll give some examples. Companies that are out there that are doing a lot of cause-based earned media right now, a lot of people enjoy working for companies where they feel like they might align personally with the cause that that company stands for. And those are just things that those companies are very strategically doing. One, it's probably part of their mission, so it is who they are, it's what they're about, it's their value system. But they don't have to go out and talk about that stuff or choose to go out and try to get earned media for those things. But when they do, people learn about their story. And so from a recruitment standpoint, it can be very, very important to use earned media. So for those companies right now that are looking to hire, which I know is probably about 100% yeah. of them, I would say a strong earned media program can be a very effective and complementary recruitment tool.
Yeah, and just to give you an example, we recently worked on a recruitment campaign for our clients. And as part of that, you know, obviously we do the paid digital side, but we also ushered in some earned media into that and did some media pitching surrounding an open interview day they were having. And then they were also expanding their facilities. And so we did a media relations pitch. It was picked up. And then that publication, one of the publications that we shared it with, put it on their social media channel. Well, that actually really, really grew in engagement. So we had hundreds of people like that and comment.
Awesome.
And some mm-hmm. were, some of the comments were even, this is a great company to work for. So you're good. Going outside of the audience that you're trying to go reach through your paid efforts and really getting that other, you know, whole other set of audiences through that paid, through that earned media outreach. So it was just a good example of how an earned media effort in concert with our already paid digital efforts was working hand in hand with one another and really expanding that reach.
Yeah, think about some of the companies here recently that have went out in the media and actually talked about some of the features and benefits of working for their company and how that's kind of influenced the industry as a whole. I mean, just the whole job market. Take, for instance, work from home, right. vacation, you know, allotment, yes. things like that.
I know there's some requirements.
Yes, exactly. I think there's a lot of that. And then on the flip side, you also see companies talking about how they might be changing or reversing different policies. Well, again, these are all different, kind of from an HR recruitment standpoint, topics that are out there. And so some companies choose to try to be kind of drivers when they know that they're going to be making these massive adjustments and that it might kind of swing the industry. And then others are just trying to, you know, talk about why they might be a great company to work for. And that might, again, be because of some of the philanthropic things that they do, some of the causes they support, or just some of the kind of, you know, innovation maybe that they do. And a lot of times people don't understand all of this about a company because, you know, I'll be the first to admit, I mean, how many companies can you really, or how many brands can you engage with where you understand their whole story and what they might be like as an employer? So this can be a huge tool and can put a big, big plus in your company's favor if you're out there doing that versus companies that aren't.
There's also an opportunity and one that I haven't mentioned yet. And when you're following stories and you see something out there that's HR related and it doesn't mention one of your clients or your business, and you're like, well, we really do that well here. Mm-hmm. It's another avenue for you to reach out to that reporter or journalist and be like, hey, I saw that you wrote this article on this topic. Our company or our client really does this well, and here's what we're doing, and it's really worked well and resonated with our employees. So there are different ways that you can see
that's
what people
point.
Are putting out there.
Yeah.
And plug yourself into that story too. So that's another avenue. I mean, there's so many conversations going on about HR and recruitment and company culture, and getting yourself in the news or just mentioned really kind of can go far in showing that, you know, your employee focus, you're really trying to do what you can.
I think that's, you know, a great point that I think maybe a lot of times brands think, I need to have a story just about my company.
Yeah.
Well, often if you're, you know, if you're having something to talk about and it's, you know, a timely topic, you may be just one quote in a story with, you know, five other brands and maybe one of them is your competitor. That can be kind of scary for brands to say like, yes, I'm earning this media. I cannot own the full message. They might have my quote next to somebody else's quote that isn't a great quote from that other person. But is it ever a possibility that you can go as, you know, an earned media or a PR professional, you can go to a partner organization and say, hey, I want to pitch this to an organization. Do you want to partner and include a quote in this news release before I send it? And now this is a more well-rounded story that is more likely to get picked up, even if it's not just about my brand. Does that ever happen?
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely possible. I don't know that you'd see a lot of like competitors doing that, but
certainly,
when there's a
yeah.
shared story,
yeah.
For example, we we do an annual Women in Agriculture campaign for a client. And so getting more people to help, you know, back up and reiterate that story and sharing other brands who feel as passionate about that topic as you really can take that media relations efforts to the next level, because you're showing the reach of that message by including other brands with whatever effort you're going for.
Well, yeah, and that sways both ways, I think. You know, you talked about being able to kind of proactively listen to what's going on in any kind of industry or in the media and be able to kind of figure out where you can interject yourself. Mm-hmm. Well, kind of, I always think the marathon versus the sprint approach. You guys talked about it earlier in the conversation about building those relationships and stuff. So you might have talked to a media outlet about something about one of the companies we're working with that's completely not part of the topic for that given story, but they remember it 6 months later when they're doing a story and they say, hey, Abby, I remember talking to you, you know, when we had lunch and you mentioned that company ABC does this. And so we're doing a story on that where maybe, again, they're not the focus, but they're kind of a validating point, or they're a company that does something similar. And so that earned media can be very, very valuable too, because again, it wasn't something that you went out and necessarily sought on day one, but it was kind of something that you, I guess, you know, planted a seed about a long time ago, and the reporter just happened to remember that you could be a valuable source for that. Mm-hmm. So I think just that understanding that, of course, you can do media relations very quickly. And in my experience, media relations very quickly is for one of two reasons. You have something very exciting to put out there, and it's a very great, happy time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or you can swing the pendulum to the crisis communication side, and you have something you very quickly need to get out there and get in front of or respond to. And so, you know, there's a place for that, and all companies need to be prepared for that, and all companies probably at some point are dealing with both of those scenarios. But I think if you take the marathon approach, it's really most effective for, you know, the companies we work with, certainly, I think, see the value in just having that always on earned media and communications channel, because you're constantly working towards always being there versus dipping your toe in and out and in and out and in and out. So I think to me, that's probably the biggest takeaway for me over time, is just making sure that people understand the value of that always on, always like having that communications team at the table for all the key conversations, whether they're creative or whether they're opportunistic or, again, possibly on the crisis communication side, but really kind of always kind of making that part of your strategy.
That really leads into maybe maintaining our relationships with media and maintaining, I guess, in a relationship with organizations themselves. So we've talked a lot about how to build a really efficient pitch for media that might be stretched thin. We've talked about, you know, kind of how to build that relationship in the first place. But as we know, the media landscape is ever evolving. You know, people that may have worked in an organization in covering a specific beat or a specific five beats, as I can remember, you know, from being a reporter, that could change in 6 months, or maybe they leave the organization. How do we kind of keep tabs on who is at an organization, who would be the best pitch, so we're not wasting time?
Yeah, I mean, listen, usually if a reporter's leaving, you'll see it in that publication that they're departing or that a new one has been added. But as public relations professionals, something we're always doing is staying attuned to the news. We're always following, we're always listening. And so just making sure that we're staying up to date on anything that's happening within those outlets or publications is really important to help us be able to better do our job.
Yeah. So. And we can really use our media, you know, public relations tools as well to help us, right?
Yes, yes. Those tools are definitely updated to add or remove any journalists or reporters who would be leaving or joining a team or even just moving around on a team. So that those tools as well are helpful in that sense.
So we know that it is really important to have that earned media as an always-on approach, and with keeps the continued momentum of an overall communication strategy. And it pairs so well with the owned and the paid channels that any client is doing. But when we talk about a strategic communications plan, Abby or Brett, can you talk about continuing the efforts, not just at one time, but really keeping that pedal pressed at a temperate speed or sometimes a little faster or slower, depending on what's going on? How does the strategic communications plan play into that?
Yeah, I think a strategic communications plan isn't, it's not something that just like set it and forget it. It's something that you can map out for an entire year or even beyond that for a campaign or even just your business in general that really gives you the different, so for instance, what we do is we would, you know, map out a number of different media relations pitches throughout the year and how we could continue to be part of that conversation. How do we make sure that we're just not putting ourselves out there and letting it sit? So making sure you're staying on top of those editorial calendars that those different publications put out there and aligning some of your messaging, some of your outreach to that. National days, any sort of events in the community where you think that your message could be heard or would resonate well with. So calendaring out different ideas throughout the year so that you can really stay on top of your message, get your name out there more frequently, and making sure that it's just not like I'm sending a press release once a quarter and that's it. Mm-hmm. Being creative with different avenues too and helping share that story in a different angle is also really valuable. So when you have a communications plan, you can map a lot of that out and be proactive. So you kind of understand what's coming with the news cycle. Obviously, there's going to be ebbs and flows because it changes every day. Mm-hmm. But having a solid groundwork, a solid framework for your messaging and your earned media efforts throughout the year is really valuable in helping you stay out there.
Yeah. We've also talked a lot about kind of repurposing content. So if your brand has crafted one key message, maybe they've had written a blog post or a newsletter about it, that could be a really good basis for a news release or social media posts and, you know, everything. But what if a news release is the place where the message first starts? What should you do on your own channels to make sure that news release is, you know, kind of reflected on your own channels?
Yeah, so obviously any news release, you're not only distributing it to the media to help share your story, you're putting it on your own channel. So you're putting it on your website. You're maybe repurposing the content for a blog or an email newsletter. You're then pushing it out on social media channels and then linking to the full story back on your website. So there are a lot of different outlets for those news releases. And news releases are still an outstanding way to get your message out and to control that message too. Mm-hmm. You don't want to overwhelm reporters with a lot of different news releases.
Yeah.
So it's important to think through, like, how could I take a different angle with this sometimes? Or just find different creative ways to help share the news. So, but yeah, it's getting a news release out. There's definitely a lot of different avenues on your own channels that you can help push that information.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Michaela, the point's really valid because whether it's the media reporter being your audience with that news release or the end consumer, generally someone who's engaged with that content, what are they going to do? They might dig deeper. Or they might jump back to a website, or there might be like hyperlinks that jump to other content that's available on that customer. Someone might jump to social media to learn more about the company. And so really strategically thinking about what's that path or journey going to be. So you put the release out and they go back to your website. How easy are they maybe to look at some easily digestible content that supports or validates kind of what you're talking about in the release? And so I think really kind of just having that discussion before and putting yourself in the consumer's mind and walking through what that journey might look like, then I think the reporters most time do a really nice job of kind of pulling that story together and using the pieces. Like Abby said, you don't want to overwhelm them, but you want to make sure that they understand, like, hey, this, your consumer, your reader is probably going to have additional questions or possibly want more information. And if they do, when they go out here, hopefully they're going to find that.
We've even gone as far as including like an FAQ document with some of our news releases, just so if they have questions, we probably have thought out quite a bit of them. And so I think that's been really valuable too. Making sure that your story, what you want to get across is in that opening paragraph and in that title, so people don't have to dig through the information is really important as well.
Yeah. And I know, you know, media kits that sit on the website can often be a great source for where you include those FAQs, you include some brand guidelines, a couple of visuals, maybe a video, to kind of help those pitches be a little bit more standalone and copy and paste. So we've talked a lot about, you know, what makes a great news release, what makes great content and a great pitch. But what about some of the newer methods that we've used? Can you talk a little bit about maybe advertorials?
Yeah, advertorials are, they're going to be a paid effort, but it really helps you control the narrative and share your story. Mm-hmm. So those
Kind of emerge.
Yeah. So you usually see those on, you know, online or in print publications, and it will say sponsored content. But basically, it's like an article, but you're sharing, you know, some thought leadership content or something that's going on in the industry and then tying your story into the end. So you can't make it so heavily focused on your business,
right?
More so than, you know, what's happening in the industry today.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end, you can tie in like how your business can help. So it's really important that you...
Not a hard sell.
Yes, not a hard sell is a good point. But yeah, that's another great avenue. And it's content that you're guaranteed out there because you're paying for it and it's you're controlling the narrative. So it's a great support to your earned and owned paid media efforts.
Yeah. And we have a good, actually, a statistic about this. Survey of nearly 600 consumers found that 27% of respondents thought an advertorial was written by a reporter or an editor, while another 29% weren't sure. So although the ad was marked as sponsored content, it didn't really, you know, come across as a hard sell or didn't leave a bad taste in people's mouths. So it's a really good option to keep in mind if mm-hmm. you're kind of thinking about trying to merge your earned channels and your paid channels there.
Yeah,
and that's a really good point. I mean, we've talked about in this series somewhat of a, you know, crossover strategy. And so when you're looking at advertorials, you're looking at search engine marketing, you're looking at kind of all those tools that are on the paid side, but they really help kind of enhance what you're doing on the earned side. So this is, to me, a really great time to talk about those customers or people out there, companies that are looking to get into earned media or content but aren't really quite sure how, because so often they're already in maybe a paid strategy and they know they've got a lot of enhancements maybe on the owned side. You know, they're paying to have their social media done or employing people to do their social media. They have website enhancements to constantly be making. And so this is an area where maybe they have not done something yet. And so how do they get involved? It's really interesting because I think you can just take the slightest, you know, when you're looking at your paid media strategy, we talked about that's your largest investment that you make usually. Mm-hmm. And when you're making that investment, a lot of times you want to make sure all of it's going into paid channels. Well, we will a lot of times look at that and talk to customers about how taking, you know, the smallest sliver of that, you know, I mean, it could be somewhere from 5 to 20% maybe of that budget and putting it into earned media and what the return on that could be. And I will be the first one to admit, you know, over time you kind of start to learn what that kind of compounding effort can look like. And on the paid side, we talked about all the great things, and you know you're really buying reach and frequency with a demographic that you're looking at, but you can really quantify that. You talked about earlier in this conversation, Abby, that, you know, we have tools that can help us quantify the value of our earned media. So maybe talk quickly about if you took that 5 to 20% out of your paid media plan and put that into earned media,
mm-hmm.
what sometimes that can look like from a return on investment.
Yeah, I think it all comes down to just the expansion of your message and getting more reach with different audiences. So really, it's just more eyes on your content.
Yeah, and we kind of mentioned earlier the fact that, you know, most news organizations or media organizations, if it's not just kind of a individual-owned blog or something like that, they're owned by national networks and part of national mm-hmm. networks. So if you write one story, you know, a quote from that story or the entire story could be shared across a network, could be shared on curation sites. I mean, it can really grow arms and legs and reach a lot of different markets that you had not considered as, you know, part of your potential audience.
Yeah, and you know, I know you guys are extremely modest on this, but I've seen campaigns where we've seen anything from 1x to probably, you know, 15 to 20x on your return on investment for, you know, what you're putting out there. So again, I think, you know, when we've talked about, you know, foundational elements and kind of building the house or, you know, managing your portfolio, this is definitely a piece that can diversify your kind of strategic marketing portfolio. And it's something that if you're not doing, I'd highly recommend, you know, talking to your internal teams, talking to your agency partners or whomever, because this can be something that's very, very impactful. It kind of plugs in, again, that validation point. You know, it's on the paid side. People have their general thoughts about, you know, clever creative or, you know, can I believe this message? And, you know, many times, absolutely, they can, you know, if the company is doing all the right things. But you think about the companies that are doing all the right things are also doing a really good job of telling their story and explaining their brand, their mission, who they are, what they're about. And that's happening on the earn side.
Mm-hmm. So we've talked a lot about some different options. We mentioned, you know, advertorials as kind of a newer option or maybe a often not thought about option. Another way that you can kind of earn attention for your brand is through reviews and earn more reviews for your organization.
So recently there was a survey that showed 91% of 18 to 34 year old consumers trust online reviews as much as they do a personal recommendation. So when we think about layering in different sort of earned media approaches to your strategic plan and your overall communication strategy, earning reviews online or setting up a system within your website to ask consumers for a review or partnering with an influencer organization, a blogger in your area, these may be considered newer ways to garner earned media, but nonetheless effective.
And if you get, you know, maybe you hit X amount of positive reviews, mm-hmm. maybe you take that to an industry publication as a pitch, or if you just have a ton of good reviews out there online, you're a more trusted source for a media member to come and ask you for a quote or for information or to even just trust your pitch.
Yeah, so this conversation could go on forever, right? Because, yeah. You know, essentially what I'm hearing from you guys is, you know, a good strategic communication plan has probably your preparedness when it comes to crisis communication, your public relations strategy kind of folded in. And we talked a lot today about media relations, and that just, to me, goes everywhere, because you're talking about, you know, influencing your social and your owned channels with that content. And then you're talking about how you take that out to consumers from an earned standpoint, what that looks like. But you have to deal with, you know, again, things like SEO or search engine optimization and how mm-hmm. that kind of works into your communication mm-hmm. fold and your content strategy. And you have to work in, you know, these reviews mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. third-party validation and all the different stuff. So, again, I think we could talk about this forever, but it's quite simply, to me, one of the most important pieces of a, you know, well-rounded media plan. And so, you know, it's been really fun these last few weeks to talk about, you know, our earned, owned, and paid strategies. And again, this is one that I would say is so vitally important, but so often overlooked. And so whether you have an in-house, you know, resource and you're doing this, I would always say it's worth, you know, looking at a partner, because just having someone else that can kind of constantly be helping with this and leaning on them and leveraging them, it's a low cost, high impact opportunity for you to really, really, really make sure that you control your narrative. And that's so important today.
Absolutely.
Yeah, earned media should not be an afterthought. It should be part of your integrated marketing approach at all times.
Absolutely.
We'd agree.
I hope we've driven home the point that all of these marketing efforts really build upon each other. And you can use our, you know, first marketing checkup series episodes of Trilux Podcast Season 2 to kind of jumpstart or even just check in where you're at with your various channels. Thank you for joining us today, Brett and Abby.
Yes, thanks,
yeah, thanks for having us.
Okay, we are on with our game segment, and we are getting to know some other members of the Trilux Communications Department a little bit better. So we have Jordan Jones joining us. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, and so Jordan is a digital communications designer, so she's a little bit of a hybrid role on the communications department, designing a lot of stuff that we use and a lot of stuff for, like, social media as well. So a little bit of a unique role, and we'll get to know Jordan a little bit more professionally, and we've got a couple of silly questions mixed in, obviously. We have to. Okay, Jordan, as rapid fire as possible or as slow as possible. Photoshop.
No in between.
Yeah, no in between. Photoshop or InDesign?
Photoshop.
Okay. App on your phone that you use the most?
Probably Instagram.
Good one. Okay, I agree with that. Favorite social platform? This is, might be a repeat.
Probably Instagram. Okay,
too. Yeah. I should have known that. Minimalism or maximalism?
I'm still on the minimalism bandwagon.
Okay. Yeah. For design, for interior design trends, for what? Everything?
I would say mostly for, like, my design, graphic design, okay. But I know for my personal life, I have to have a balance of both.
Okay.
I'm kind of in between.
Yeah.
I'm really addicted to those videos on TikTok where people are like, here's my maximalist house.
Yeah.
It's
I know.
Just like, 3,000 like pictures on their walls. I'm like, how do you have the time to set all that up?
I think it is kind of a little bit of a nice change of pace because I see, like, I don't know, I have a child, so I'm like, there is no possible way I can do minimalism at this point in my life. So it is kind of nice to see other people have, you know,
embrace
decor everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of blankets.
Yes.
If you don't have one blanket on your home on your couch, you're sad and you're sick. So, yeah.
Well, you're sick because you're cold.
Yeah,
you that's
could be.
True.
Yeah, I'm with you on the minimalism for design. I mean, you can't overload the eyes quite so much. Okay, that was clearly a hot question. The wildest piece of design work that you have ever had to do?
Okay, this is a tough one because I feel like my design career has been pretty tame in terms of the content
good.
That I've had to
that's
design.
Good.
But I would say, like, things have been wild more early in my career. Regarding, like, the time frame or the turnover for a design piece,
okay.
Things can get kind of crazy if you have a short
What's the turnover. Shortest amount?
Well, I worked at a college newspaper when I was in college, and there'd be a lot of late nights waiting for, like, games to get over, things like that, and a lot of crunching things to the deadline.
Yeah, absolutely. So fun fact, Jordan and I worked at the same student newspaper with a little bit of overlap. Yeah, a lot of late nights, a lot of tears from people, a lot of, you know, work on extreme past the deadline.
Yeah.
Fun times and teaches you how to churn out work quickly,
it does.
Though. Okay, you get $100. What are you going to do with it?
I'm going to the plant store.
Oh,
getting
okay.
Some plants.
Yeah. I love that. Okay.
You big plant owner.
I do
parent.
Like I'm not a very good plant parent, I would say. I'm
no
a good
one is.
Plant kidnapper.
Oh, okay. So you save them as they're, like, on their last leg, or you just kind of at least hold them for a little bit?
I try to save them, and then sometimes things go wrong and they die.
Yeah.
But I think the biggest thing is that I try.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah.
You try so well.
Yeah. It's all about the effort.
I
love seeing people who are like, oh, I'll get a plant to make sure I'm good at taking care of stuff so I can get, like, a pet or, like, have a kid. I'm like, no, plants are, like, way harder than
they
those
are.
Two.
They are. Because
yeah.
they need such – every plant needs such a specific environment. And
mm-hmm.
often,
right.
you know,
so
in
finicky.
A house plant, it's hard to grow anything in a tiny pot inside with little light. So.
And then, like, a lot of house plants are – jungle plants
that
you're bringing from their native conditions
right.
and then giving them, like,
cold
water
dry,
like
dim
once
light.
Every 2 months
absolutely I'm with you, we can always try. Okay, your favorite beer?
I would say Exile Ruthie.
I love that one.
Good
classic.
It's very light.
No free promo.
But
or maybe
it's good and light, so
sponsor us Exile. No, I definitely love that one. I know you've tried many different kinds of beer, so that's a good one. Okay, describe your perfect day going to Exile.
That could be factored in, definitely. I would say starting the day, having, like, brunch, like sleeping in.
Yes.
Having brunch, good scrambled eggs, some pancakes, and hash browns.
Okay.
And coffee.
Good. Okay, that sounds great.
And then, yeah, just probably doing some, like, window shopping or going on a hike. Yeah, and then maybe ending the day by going to Exile.
Awesome. Maybe a plant store in between.
Yeah, maybe a plant store.
Yeah, sounds good. Pretty good day. Okay, your go-to karaoke song.
Okay, probably anything by ABBA.
Oh, what a classic.
Oh, yeah.
Dancing Queen.
Everybody loves that, yeah. And
guys,
I mean,
if you guys are ever in Sweden, by the way, the ABBA Museum.
Oh,
it's pretty legit.
It's really, it turned me into an ABBA fan. I was like, oh, ABBA's great. Yeah, yeah. But then you go there, you're like, I'm in.
Like, see, I'm not a big fan, but like on a regular basis. But I mean, you can't resist the music. Like,
it's
if,
so good.
If everybody's. Good. Yeah, yeah, it is. It's so catchy. It just is infectious. Okay, last question. We're going to stretch you a little bit on your design, maybe OCD. You have to pick one to mess with, kerning or letting.
I think my default one that I'm going to go to first is letting. They should both be addressed, and they would both bother me if they didn't go addressed, but I think letting is more noticeable.
Okay, and that's the space in between lines of copy.
Yeah, the baseline. So,
got it.
Yeah.
Okay, well, good to know. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you to our co-host and guests. You can find much more information on these topics that we discussed today and our previous episode topics on Trilux Journal at trilux.com. Remember to rate and subscribe on your podcast service of choice and find us on YouTube and on social media. Bye.